This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson. I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Glad you're with me today. We're going to start out talking a little baseball with our good friend Lynn Henning from the Detroit News. So, Lynn, how you doing, buddy?
I'm fine, Earl, as we get here closer to football.
And, yes, exactly 2 weeks.
Baseball, that's for sure. Yeah, everybody seems to have turned the corner here, even if there's a pennant race going on here in Detroit.
Yes, we're getting ready. As you know, just like Bob Bonowski wrote this morning, a lot of excitement with Michigan and Michigan State. It's going to be hard to contain both sides before that game, I'll tell you.
Nice to see that two teams that really should have been up there all along are finally up there. And it's fun stuff, Earl. Yeah, I think it's tragic that so many decades unfurled here where Michigan State was either down or then when they finally got up here for 3 years, Michigan was down. But now you've got them both on front burners, and that's kind of how it should be.
Yes, it should be, that's for sure. I know we'll be looking forward to this game this year. The series has really become a series I've been thinking for a long time. It'd be nice to have a Michigan-Michigan State series, but it finally has developed into that.
Yeah, and I think maybe everybody's expecting – a little too much, but that goes with the territory, yeah. No matter what team in what area.
Mm-hmm.
And Michigan, I think, is a little overrated this year, and it's no knock because they've gotten so much better so fast, but I don't see them coming anywhere close to Alabama in that opener. And I think they're going to take a couple of knocks through the course of the season, to say the least. Notre Dame is not going to be any fun down there for them. And by the same token, with Michigan State again breaking in a new quarterback here, this usually has its perils. Even though Maxwell, as much experience as he has, he should probably move fairly seamlessly into that job. I think you can make the case when he's been around there now for three previous years that he can probably handle this thing and handle it in a plus fashion. But you want to see how all of this plays out, too, Earl, and that's part of the anticipation and part of the fun.
Yes, it is. That's for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Tigers. I mean, you know, they're starting the stretch run, and soon, not yet, but they're starting there, and they still have so many inconsistencies, inconsistent bullpen, inconsistent hitting. Do you think this team has enough, if they can pull it together, to win this division?
I don't know if they can win the division for this reason. 2.5 games, it doesn't sound like much, Earl, but with 44 or so to go, it's more than you think. And particularly it's more when you're talking about a White Sox team that probably needs to get hurt someplace, frankly, if they're going to cough up that lead. And the reason is their pitching's good, their bullpen's good, and their lineup is better than people realize. Better probably through the back end than Detroit's is. And that wasn't the way it was supposed to go this year. But that is a big reason why that team has been in first place most of the season. The Tigers have been there only a few days. Whether you can close that gap or not over 40 games, certainly they can. And if Detroit gets hot, which is conceivable, then they close it very easily and maybe win it comfortably. But that, to me, is going to be asking a team to play over its head. And I don't know if that's going to occur. I think they do have a reasonable shot at a wild card spot. And if they do get into it, it could be like it was in 06 when they won the wild card then and made it in and got to the World Series. With their starting pitching so strong 1-3, this is a very dangerous team to have to play in a short series. But they also need to get a few people swinging the bats.
Yes.
And that hasn't happened all year. And that second half of the lineup, whether you're talking designated hitter or corner outfield spot, are both subpar, and that really drags down an offense.
You know, I also been looking at, with the schedule, I mean, they've got the last 12 games of the year between Kansas City and Minnesota. And that's sort of, even though they're supposedly the worst teams in the league, they both play the Tigers pretty well. That sort of gets me a little bit nervous, knowing they have to play Kansas City and Minnesota in those last 12 games.
If you look at Minnesota over the second half, that's been a very good team. And on any day that they get even a modicum of pitching, they usually win. Kansas City is dangerous because their pitching has picked up a little bit. Guthrie's helped them. And they'll be bringing in a few people after September 1st, Will Myers and some of those guys. And that is going to be a very, very much a ticking time bomb, in my estimation, when they're going to begin to get good. Eric Hosmer hasn't had much of a season. He could suddenly have a big 6 weeks. That team could be no fun to play. But I think it really comes down, Earl, if the Tigers are quality, it doesn't really matter. They're going to have to win those games no matter who's on the schedule. And if they can't, then they didn't deserve to make the playoffs anyway.
Yeah, so true. And it's going to be a darn good battle down the stretch, Lynn. The Tigers, I've been saying all year long, I think the Tigers are good enough to win it. But now, as we've looked at all season long, this team has just been so maddling inconsistent. It just drives you crazy. But yet, I still think they have enough talent to win it. But, boy, you can't get rid of being inconsistent. I don't know how you get rid of that. You've been consistent the whole year.
It's frustrating and maddening to the fans, I know. They did make themselves better with one move at the trade deadline, which was cleaning up second base. That was really important in my estimation. Everybody made a big deal about pitching, but I always thought you could get by in that fifth spot as long as Smiley was healthy, or if you had Turner or some mix, even an Adam Wilk or someone like that could come up. But right now, Earl, it's on Sanchez, and he has shown what happens many times when you bank on pitching coming across from another league. Doesn't always hold up in the second half. You can see that with Greinke, and you can see that with Ryan Dempster and some people like that. But as I look at it right now, they did strengthen themselves up the middle when they got Infante. That's really important. Now it becomes a matter of, can they get anybody, whether it's Avila or Bosch or Young, or one of those dudes to begin hitting the ball. And one of those three is going to have to come through. We thought for a while it was going to be Bosch, then he reverted back to form. Now, they will get some help September 1st. And don't count out a guy like Abisayo Garcia, who's doing very well at Erie, 21, but he has tremendous speed, arm, and defense. That alone will give you a little bit of help at one of those corner outfield spots where they can get very taxed on defense and speed. So it isn't a closed book yet, but it's going to be tough, I think.
Lynn, that's the thing a question I have for you, because they've been so inconsistent all year long. What's been the problem? Why do you think this has happened? Because at the beginning of the year, we thought this was a pretty solid lineup, from top to bottom. But boy, it's other than Fielder and Cabrera, it's been extremely inconsistent the whole season. So what do you think has happened to the Tigers or to those guys?
Austin Jackson, of course, was gone for five weeks. When they got him back, that lead-loaded the front of the offense. Mm-hmm. And he could be easily an MVP, top five, top seven, top eight guy by the time this thing is over. So that helped. And he's still there with the big two in the middle. Infante helps a little bit because he's really pretty close to a 300 hitter. He hasn't had a lot of luck, but you can see that he's solid. But now we start talking about the fall down areas. Brennan Bosch was supposed to be good this year and should have been good this year. Yeah. We've seen streaks where he could be. He had gotten, we thought, past that rookie season second half because he played so well last year and should have been somebody you could count on this year. Hasn't been able to come through. Delman Young has been a complete bust at DH. That's an important position, Earl, to give away. And that hasn't changed. So automatically now you've got a couple of traps in that batting order that haven't been compensated for. Now, Andy Dierks, since he came back, having missed 10 weeks, a big help. That's why you look to September and say they really are getting a few of their pieces back. And if they can get a contribution from a corner outfield spot or a DH, they've got enough pitching to make this thing hold up. But they also can't have Joaquin Benoit go through a period here or an interlude where he's giving up 10 home runs in 15 innings. That's the craziest thing that you could have concocted this year, was for that to happen. So they'll need some help, but they should get some help, because they also will have a few people that they'll call up. Bruce Rondon, their fireballer at Toledo, has got a good chance to come up after September 1st. I could see him being of help. Al Albuquerque might be physically ready to compete in September. That would help their bullpen. So to me, it gets down to a couple of things. DH in a corner outfield spot. Are one of those guys going to hit? If they don't, they're not going to win the division. If somebody does come through, Avila has a decent September, you can make a case for the Tigers here, because overall I think they're a more talented team than the White Sox.
Do you think this is probably going to be a Jim Leland's last year, or do you think he might try to hang on and get another year out of this club?
I think it'll be his decision if he walks away, because he may feel that if the team didn't win this year, that it was in part his problem. And I suppose you could lay it at his feet, but I don't know why. A manager can't go out and hit against pitching. He can't go out and field against hitters. Their defense has been a problem all year long, which is an architectural problem that is really at the door of the general manager. But I think, Earl, and I didn't have this feeling until this week, that if they wouldn't win, Leland, about to turn 68, might say, I think it's time for me to leave Detroit. I'm just giving you a gut feeling there. It wouldn't be because a different manager would have had different results. I don't believe that. But it might be a consensus that, okay, 7 years is a long time to be at one job, and maybe they need some different blood there in the manager's office. I don't know that that's relevant. I think if you're going to make the Tigers a contender next year, or a division winner from stem to stern, then you're going to have to replace the people that we just talked about. And that's not the manager. That's a corner outfielder. That's a DH, and that's better defense. So that, to me, is an irrelevancy, but it could play out as we're talking right now. It could end up being that Jim Leland decides enough's enough here. I could see that happening this year. I couldn't see it occurring a year ago, but I think a few things have changed if you want to talk about the managerial future here.
Yes, now, we haven't talked about this as much, even though you did mention a couple of guys, but the bullpen has been radically inconsistent as well. What's been happening there? And it's sometimes you get a really good performance, and then sometimes you don't. I know Valverde definitely hasn't been as good as he was last year, of course. I don't think anybody expected him to be that good, but, you know, a lot of people are just surprised that he hasn't been that good. But overall, the bullpen just hasn't been as strong as people would expect it to be.
No, I'd look at two people there, but I wouldn't really include Valverde so much as I would Benoit and Koch. And both of those guys were supposed to be very good this year, and you had every reason to believe, based on track record, that they would be good. I don't know what happened to Koch this season. But one thing you find out, Earl, is if you put the X-ray glasses on and look at every team, you find out that the bullpen tends to be pretty erratic during the course of a year. Not for great periods of time, but you'll see that relievers, even closers, setup people, seventh inning guys, you're going to not always have eight cylinders there, or seven in the case of a relief corps, always humming. And if there's a breakdown, it's pretty glaring, and then the whole bullpen gets indicted. Their bullpen, up until a couple of weeks ago, had been astonishingly consistent. Valverde isn't much different of a pitcher this year than he was last. He just had greater fortunes last season and had some extremely good luck in a couple of circumstances, or he'd have had some blown saves that would have made last year look a little different. So you knew that that wasn't going to be repeated this year. My concern going into the season was you had Valverde turning 34 and Benoit turning 35, and at some point you're going to certainly see the sunset on some careers. Was it going to be this year? I don't know. And I still don't know, because Benoit has every ability, based on the strength of his fastball, to still pitch as Benoit has in the past. But his control has been, for whatever reason, a little bit off the mark this year. And if you're going to begin getting behind hitters, as you know, in this game, you're going to get crushed. And that's what's happened to him. Koch went through a weird period. I think it may be pretty much behind him, and he should revert back to fairly trustworthy form. But bullpens are always, always mercurial. They tend to be. And the Tigers have proved it this year.
Okay. Hey, Lynn, I want to thank you for being with me. It's always a pleasure talking with you. You know, we'll have you on to talk a little bit more football the next time, and we'll talk a little bit more baseball with you as we head down the Tigers' stretch run here.
We'll do it, Earl. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Lynn. We'll talk to you later, buddy. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Lynn Henning from the Detroit News talking sports with us right here on AM 870. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on WKAR.
Turn on the faucet and water comes out. But how does it work? And how long will that infrastructure last? I'm Flora Lichtman. Join me on Science Friday for a trip underground to see the old leaky pipes that deliver our water and what it'll take to repair them. Plus, why your blood type may increase your risk of heart disease. That's on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday on Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 o'clock right here on WKAR.
Here's a look at the mid-Michigan weather forecast for the next few days. Today, partly sunny and breezy. We're expecting a high around 72. Mostly clear and cool tonight with lows in the upper 40s. On Saturday, mostly sunny with highs in the mid-70s. And the outlook for Sunday, partly sunny, a chance of light rain showers and highs in the lower 70s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, let's turn our attention, talk a little bit of football and even a little bit more baseball with our good friend from WLNS TV, sports director Fred Heumann is with us. Fred, how you doing, buddy?
Fine, Earl. I got to follow Lynn Henning. Now I'm going to sound stupid.
No, you won't sound stupid. You can
well,
talk.
He's so smart. I mean, I don't have big words like he has.
You know, Lynn's a good friend of ours, but he does know his baseball. And I know you know your baseball, too. I mean, you know, the Tigers, I'm a little bit surprised right now because they've struggled so much, but I've always thought they've got those 12 games at the end between Minnesota and Kansas City, but those teams are starting to play better. So I'm starting to get a little nervous about the Tigers winning this division of theirs.
Well, you don't have to get nervous about those teams, and you don't have to be nervous because they have 13 of the next 16, I believe, at home. You can be nervous about those seven games of the White Sox because, you know, I think the White Sox are for real. I think they're going to be there right toward the end.
Yeah.
I think they've hired a good manager who nobody likes in Robin Ventura. Adam Dunn has come back. They got not as good a pitching as the Tigers, but they got some young players they've infused into their lineup. And before the season, I bought into the Kool-Aid. I said the Tigers are going to win this division by 20 games. There's no way they can't. Because I didn't think anyone else was that good. And Chicago's turned out to make us all look bad because they've been a lot better than anyone thought.
Yes, they have, and that's been good for Chicago. But, you know, what's been surprising with the Tigers is they haven't hit that well. They've been an extremely inconsistent hitting team. And, you know, at the beginning of the year, we thought this was going to be basically a dynasty, like another roof team. But it's certainly been far from that. They've got two really good hitters in Cabrera and Fielder, and everybody else is, you know, who knows who's going to come to bat and who's going to give you some help one day from day to day.
Yeah, I think the last 6 weeks, though, Earl, they've straightened that out a little bit. They're hitting better in positions and situations. They're hitting a little better with runners on base. They're moving runners better. They drive me crazy with how many early counts they swing the bat in. They don't get patience at the plate. Brennan Bosch is just the worst at that. He's just swinging it. He's just fishing, and I think he's probably, with the development of Andy Dirks who's come back, I think Bosch is probably trade bait. But I think that the Tigers, when they started out of the gate like that, I think they dumbfounded everyone, me included. They just didn't play the game very well. They didn't hit in situations. They just looked lost. But I think the last 6 weeks, they're starting to, you know, the two big guys, the two big guns are having, they're both MVP candidates. Cabrera's probably going to win it unless he falls off a ladder. And I think they have hit better. And then when you look at their pitching, I'm not a big Sanchez fan. I wasn't even crazy about getting him. But I had top four is pretty comparable with most teams in baseball at their starting pitching.
Yes, starting pitching has really been pretty good, but you know that bullpen has been that's been another area that's been pretty inconsistent this year. They're going to have to really pitch better down the stretch here. We've got 44 games left, and yeah, they've got a lot of work to do down the stretch to make this team a consistent winner and to become a legitimate chance to win this division, which I think they still can do it, but you know I just don't know now.
I think mercurial was the word Lynn used on the bullpen. I'm going to look that up when we're done. But the bullpen has been fairly erratic.
Uh-huh.
And Benoit's been a little bit of a mystery. I was listening to what Lynn said about getting behind in counts. I think that's
yes.
a big factor.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be interesting to see what direction they go next year, if Valverde will even be back, because they have this guy Rondon down in the minors who throws 101 miles per hour. He'll probably come up in September. And maybe this is a time to cut bait with Valverde after this season. But, yeah, their bullpen in the last – at the same point when I'm talking about how their hitting has come around the last 6 weeks, in the last 4 or 5 weeks, their bullpen has let them down in a few cases. But it really, over the whole long haul, hasn't been that terrible. It's just they got out of the gate so slow this year. They're still trying to recover from that.
Yes, that was a big problem when they got off to such a slow start. What happened? Why did you think the Tigers maybe got to a slow start? I know one of the problems they had early in the year, they soured for a little while, but it's been inconsistent hitting, but they've been really poor hitters with two strikes out, and they left a lot of runners on third base this year.
Yeah, that was maddening. I think a lot of reasons. I think when they signed Fielder and the whole world penciled them in as World Series participants, I think
yeah.
that weighs on a team. I think they try to live up to the expectations. I think they have a lot of players that are, Cabrera and Fielder included, that are in Peralta, that are warm weather hitters, and they have that intent. And I'm not offering excuses. I'm just trying to give you reasons. I think when it's cold in April and May, they don't break out of it. And then the weather turns warm, and they don't have an off day every 5 days, and they're playing every day. I think sometimes that brings the best out of certain hitters. Between that and the injuries, which aren't an excuse but were a factor, and getting Fielder and Cabrera hitting the ball consistently and having Peralta come around a little and finally finding a second baseman, which was a big hole in their lineup, I think you add all those things to the fact that Pfister got healthy again and you got a team that is showing up as a pretty decent one. Now, like I said, because the White Sox are for real, this could go right down to the wire, and if the season ended today, the Tigers would be out of the playoffs.
Yes, now, we haven't mentioned the one team in that division. Cleveland has been, they were a hot start. Now they've cooled off. What do you think about Cleveland? Can they come back at all? Can they at least make it interesting and sort of could be a spoiler in this, between the Tigers and Chicago? Could Cleveland somehow just be a little bit of a spoiler there?
In one word, the answer is no. And the reason we didn't mention Cleveland is they aren't worth mentioning. No, I think they're a fraud. I don't think they're a contender. I do think they have some good young players, and their shortstop, Cabrera, is the real deal. And Hafner's come on a little bit, but they don't have the pitching, the team, the manager, the chemistry. Cleveland won't be a factor in this early. Maybe they'll play a spoiler, but they won't be in any kind of factor in this race. They're done. They're cooked.
Yeah. Hey, Fred, you mentioned that, like, that young kid who throws it 100 miles per hour. Do we make too much of pitchers who are throwing 100 miles an hour? Because a lot of times we say pitchers at such a high rate and pitches so high. Do we make too much of that a guy throws the ball 100 miles an hour?
It's funny you say that because the short answer on that one is yes. As I said that, I caught myself because remember 6 years ago, Joel Zamaya was throwing
yes.
ball 100 miles an hour, and he was putting people in the seats, and people were wearing his jersey when people were going. I argued with Lynn Henning to this till death. He was real high on Zamaya, and I just said he's a thrower. He's not a pitcher.
Pitcher, yeah.
And at the major league level, you can't throw it by hitters. You can throw it 110 miles an hour. They're too good. And I said at the time, now I didn't know about the injuries, but I said at the time that Zamaya would be out of baseball in 5 years. I said this in 2006. And Lynn, you just said I'm crazy, and that turned out to be right. But the point is, in answering your question, is yeah, a lot of these guys now throw 95, 96,
yes.
97. What's the difference between 97 and 100?
That's true.
And if you can't pitch, and you don't know, the thing about this Rondon guy is I guess he has a nasty changeup. But if you don't have three pitches at this level, I don't care if you throw 200 miles an hour. Those hitters at that level are going to find a way to catch up to it.
Oh, for sure. Well, Fred, let's talk a little bit of football, because we know that in 2 weeks, the Spartans take the field against Boise State. That's going to be a good first game. Michigan State, I just read today, is 7-point favorite in that game. So, you know, the Spartans, everyone is, and they've got that rating now in Sports Illustrated before the season. So what are your take on the Spartans this far?
Well, I'm interested to see them. I think that the one thing that D'Antonio and the stability of his staff have done here, as you know, Earl, in the last 5 years, is they've added a lot of depth to this program.
Yes.
They got some injuries now, but when guys don't, I mean, Narduzzi said the other day that when a guy goes down now, we have somebody that can go in and not lose a beat. He said a few years ago that wasn't true. We lost a guy, we were cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wouldn't say that at the time.
Yeah.
But I think they have built a two deep, and that takes time. That takes time in recruiting. That takes redshirting freshmen. A lot of people don't like the redshirt freshmen, but when you redshirt freshmen, you get them for 4 more years. They have depth now, and they have a really good defense. But the one thing that I say, and I don't know anything about Andrew Maxwell. I haven't seen him enough. He's a great kid. Everyone raves about him. But I think Kirk Cousins is going to look a lot better now that he's gone than when he was here. I think when you try to replace a senior leader, a 3-year starter at an important position like quarterback, and then you take away B.J. Cunningham and those receivers he had, I think that's gonna put a damper on this offense. Not that Maxwell won't eventually be good, but I think he'll make some mistakes, and I think replacing a 3-year starter at quarterback is tough to do. So that said, I think that's going to be perhaps the Achilles heel of Michigan State. Not because I don't think Maxwell isn't any good, I just think it takes time to get good, as it did with Kirk Cousins and a lot of other Michigan State quarterbacks we've seen in the past. Look at Brian Hoyer. Whoever thought he'd play in the NFL?
That's true. Yes, it does take time. And that's the thing with Maxwell. I mean, he's got to get time to adjust and learn. All you know, they're talking very highly, as you know, of Lepet and Fowler and what they've been doing. But Maxwell's got to get used to working with him on a regular, consistent basis. If they're going to be the top two receivers, they're going to be out there. So he has to learn to work with those guys, doesn't he?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. That could take time.
Mm-hmm.
How much time will that take? Will it take 5 games? Will it take 10 games? Will it take 1 season? Will it be in the next season? I don't know. That's the unknown. I'm just saying that I don't think, as high as they are on Maxwell, to say that he can step right into Kirk Cousins' shoes, I think is a little disrespectful to Cousins. I don't think anyone realizes how good and how efficient Cousins was and those receivers were in this offense.
Oh, for sure. Well, what about, with the depth they've had, and I know they were talking with Coach D'Antonio this morning about the overall depth, and he was just naming off players after player, and it does appear, like you said, and Mark said this morning, they've got good depth, basically excellent backup on the offensive line, should be outstanding. The offensive line, but we don't know. That's the one thing that's funny. It looks like we've got to have a good offensive line and a good defensive line. I'm not as sure as the defensive line will be as good as the defensive line was last year. So they've already had a few injuries, Fred. So do we have to worry at all about injuries, or should we just look at that? Because Michigan State has been fairly injury-free the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, the depth helps that. That's part of what I was talking about, because they do have some bumps and bruises, and a couple of guys, it looks like, are going to be out into the season when you talk Treadwell and the young receiver. And Bertrand's got a little problem now. But what I'm saying is, because they built depth through recruiting, they aren't devastated when they lose a man now. And that said, I think you're right. Just like Cousins on offense, when you take a Jarrell Worthy away from that defensive line, I mean, he was a beast. You don't automatically replace him, but now the guy's got to step up. That'll be the big question mark. That's why I'm anxious to see this team, to see who steps up.
Yes, because that's going to be the challenge for these guys to step up, to take the places and do a good job for the other starters that they're replacing. So I'm looking for. I think it's going to be a very good year, Fred. I think I'm not going to say another 10 or 11 win season, but I think it could certainly win. They'll be an 8 or 9 win team.
Well, I don't make a lot of predictions. If you pin me down, I'd give them an 8-4. But there's such a thin line between 7 wins and 11 wins anymore.
Yes.
You know, that's making a play here or there. And that's why we need to see, you know, people get fascinated with predictions like they mean anything. Nobody knows. That's why the storylines have to play out. Will Maxwell rise to the challenge? Will the young defensive people on the line and elsewhere in the secondary be able to pick up where the Trenton Robinsons and Jarrell Worthies left off? Will the offensive line stay healthy? Is Le'Veon Bell the lead back they hope he is? Are these receivers, Benny Fowler and company, going to be able to replace the B.J. Cunninghams and Keith Nichols, who made a lot of clutch catches? That remains to be seen, and the answer to that will tell you whether they're an 8-win team or 11-win team. That's the answer.
Yes, it's just going to be a very good year. I know we can say that it should be a very good year. Hopefully, they'll get enough wins that will satisfy the fans. I'm not sure how many wins the fans will be satisfied with. I expect they will look for like even maybe more than 8 or more to be satisfied with. But you know that's the thing. Are you have any inkling what the people might say as far as being happy with how many wins, or do they think they're getting to that point where we should win 10 to 12 games a year?
Yeah, well, I think D'Antoni and company have spoiled them. My fans are never satisfied. They want Rose Bowls and national championships here, and that's what coaches preach and that's what players preach. But you know, there's such a thin line between 8 and 11. I'm interested to see how certain players perform and, you know, kind of let the cards fall where they may. There's so many different things that fall into place during the season. That's why I hate predictions. It's just, I hate to sound like a coach. It's just like, let's play the doggone games and see how this plays out. I don't know how many games they're going to win.
Yeah,
I know they're solid. They got depth, but they're young at some key positions, and that's what I'm interested to see how that plays out.
Well, you know, we both heard D'Antonio say on so many occasions that it's a game of inches. Well, last year, the last 2 years, they got a lot of those inches, those plays at the end, but I'm not so sure now this is year three of these last 3 years here that they're going to win many games on the last play or in the last series and such. That could be a little bit dicey this year, don't you think?
Yeah, I think when those inches sometimes go the other way, and I'm not suggesting they were lucky, but you don't get all those breaks, everything doesn't fall into place, and that's why I'm saying you look at 8-4, you look at that, and I'm sure a lot of people say, ugh, that's not a very good season. That's because of the expectations they've built up here. They could be 8-4 and have a bright future because of, you know, these players that we talked about, and I'm interested to see what they do here after they've had these three fabulous years in a row. I'm anxious to see not so much what they do this year, if D'Antonio can maintain, and what they do over the next 3 or 4 year period. That's, as to steal Tom Izzo's language, that's a program. And
yes,
I want to see if this program can stay at this level. I think bigger picture. That's what I'm more interested to see than whether they win 8 games or 9 games or 10 games or 11 games this year.
And the recruiting, he has increased the recruiting. The one thing that I noticed, Fred, that you know, D'Antonio has always talked about recruiting, and it's the kind of recruits he recruits to the system. He just doesn't go after the best players or the best players, quote unquote, but he gets players who likes to play in his system, which seems to be working.
Yeah, I agree with that. I really admire the D'Antonio and the staff philosophy on that. Because they're not all caught up in getting the 5-star recruits.
Yeah.
They're not caught up with, you know, a lot of schools will just recruit players because they're on everybody's radar, whether they want them or not. And they don't look at character issues and things like that. So they just over-recruit, and they get everybody. D'Antonio and his staff have been really good at maybe not always chasing the 5-star recruit. Get a 4- or 3-star recruit and make them something. That's what happened with Kirk Cousins. That's kind of what happened with Le'Veon Bell, who came from Columbus, and Ohio State didn't even want him. That's happened with a lot of players they have. I could go on and on. And I think that's a credit to this staff. I don't think D'Antonio ever cares if he has a top recruiting class in the Big Ten or a top 5 recruiting class in the country. That stuff is all overrated, I'm telling you. It's what coaches do with players when they get them, and can they turn a 3-star recruit into a 5-star player? And I think that's what this staff has been very good at.
Okay. Hey, Fred, I want to thank you for being with me. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And maybe I'll run into you some evening out somewhere about. But it's good talking with you, my friend.
Let's meet you and Ebling watch a football game this year. Huh? We haven't done that in a while. Huh?
No, we haven't. We'll have to do that one time this year.
Let's get a pizza and a salad and watch a game. Ebling will buy.
Yeah, we'll make Jack buy. He'll have to buy 2 pizzas.
Well, he's writing that book now, so he's rich, yeah. So he can buy, he can pick up our tab. Okay, let's do it.
Yes, he can. We'll do that, Fred. Hey, all talk right. to you later, my friend.
All right,
yep. Bye-bye. Yep, and that's Fred in it. Fred Heumann, the sports director from WLNS-TV, Channel 6. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on WKAR.
Can we make rules for the internet, and will people follow them? I'm Flora Lichtman. Join me on Science Friday for a talk with super blogger Maria Popova on the Curator's Code and her brand of combinatorial creativity, plus actress and math advocate Danica McKellar, and a look at the latest on flu vaccines. That's on Science Friday from NPR.
And that's Science Friday on Talk of the Nation, coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Good afternoon. Here's the weather forecast going into the weekend. It'll be partly sunny and breezy today, high near 72 degrees. A mostly clear night and cool tonight with lows in the upper 40s. Mostly sunny on Saturday with highs in the mid-70s. And looking ahead to Sunday's forecast, partly sunny with a chance of light rain showers and highs in the 70s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527 or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, now let's turn our attention to, we've talked college football, we've talked baseball, now let's talk pro football with our good friend Jared Bell from USA Today, and we're going to talk about the NFL preseason games coming up this week. So let's bring in our good friend Jared Bell. Jared, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good, Earl. Hey, you got to tell me who's playing this weekend in preseason football.
Oh, yeah. Because
we're going to talk about preseason football. I'm like, oh, my goodness. No, not that.
Well, you know, we're not ready for the regular season yet, so we got to talk about these preseason games.
Yeah, well, you know, one general manager told me the other day that pretty much if you were to do the math on all of preseason football, about 70% of the players on any on all the plays will not be there for week one of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So you're really talking about guys that are not going to be there when it gets started for real.
Yeah. You know, one thing I've really liked now, finally, is that these coaches in the NFL are finally starting to make the offenses more friendly to the quarterbacks. And, you know how it used to be when a quarterback would come out of college, he'd have to learn a whole new system, whole new everything. Some could adapt to it. Most of them couldn't a lot of times. But nowadays, they're really tailoring the system to what the quarterback can do. And that seems to have helped the game somewhat.
You know what? I think that's a great point, Earl, because we saw it last year. Well, first of all, two things that you said. Number one, the fact that young quarterbacks are being position to start as rookies,
yes,
is, you know, kind of a departure from the normal NFL way of thinking. Now, you've had many cases over the years where, you know, the guy who was number one in the draft, like Peyton Manning or Troy Aikman or somebody like that, started as a rookie. But, you know, last year when we saw Cam Newton, Andy Dalton, you know, really light it up as rookies, I think, and in a lockout year, mind you, I think it really kind of put the pressure and kind of raised the expectation for others to come along as rookies. And we're going to see three of them this weekend, the top two, you know, Luck and, you know, Robert Griffin III with the Redskins. And then, you know, Ryan Tannehill is going to start for the Dolphins. He was picked, I think, eighth in the first round. So you'll have three rookie quarterbacks starting, you know, going into the season as starters. And I think anybody can look back at last year at Newton and look back at Andy Dalton and say, hey, it can be done. You can learn this stuff. And, you know, with football being year-round nowadays, too, you've got time to do it. The
yes.
second point you made, you know, it also comes to mind with this. We saw what Carolina did last year. Rob Chudzinski, he's the offensive coordinator with the Panthers, and he used a lot of the principles that Cam Newton flourished in at Auburn last year, and read option being, you know, the term of the day, really, when it comes to Cam Newton. So he's that, you know, that pass-run threat. It's a pass first, run when you have to, and you know, Cam Newton took it and ran with it, so to speak. So now Mike Shanahan with the Washington Redskins is putting in an offense with Robert Griffin III, a.k.a. RG3, and you see a whole lot of, you know, bootlegs and waggles and sprint outs and things like that that take advantage of his footwork. I don't know if they want him running a whole lot because RG3 is, you know, he's a slight guy, really. I wouldn't want him taking too many hits if I'm the Redskins, but still in all, they're designing that offense, like you said, to really suit his skill set.
Yes, and another quarterback we didn't get to mention, but one who's a low-round draft choice, I mean a high, like a sixth-round draft choice, Russell Wilson. He's really excelling well out in Seattle.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to start. I think, you know, it's Matt Flynn, the guy who they spent money on in free agency, and then Tavares Jackson still trying to hang on, too, after, you know, a year ago being the guy that they brought in. But, yeah, Russell Wilson, the next guy. Hey, one more rookie quarterback, and I got a chance to meet him a few weeks ago at minicamp, Kirk Cousins. Okay,
well,
that's RG3's roommate. They're going through this thing together. You know, on draft day, you know, that was one of the big questions. Why would the Redskins draft another quarterback after they took RG3 and invested the franchise in him? Well, you know, I think the Redskins think that, hey, number one, you got to have insurance. Number two, if you can get Kirk Cousins to the point where he can develop and be a solid backup, then down the road you can get value for him. If, you know, say RG3 goes on to be the great player they think he can be, they'll still get some value out of Kirk Cousins. Remember, the Atlanta Falcons a few years ago had Matt Schaub as Michael Vick's backup. Mm-hmm. And just before Michael Vick had the dogfighting incident revealed, they traded Matt Schaub and got a boatload from the Houston Texans. And Schaub has gone on to become a Pro Bowler with the Texans. So I think that's the Redskins' thinking with Kirk Cousins. But I did get a chance to meet him. Really seems like a sharp guy. And I was telling them that the things that I heard from NFL people before the draft were just so complimentary, really talking about his presence as a leader and how impressed they were, you know, at the pro day at Michigan State. So anyway, just had to give a little shout out to my Spartan brother there.
Yeah, now that's the thing, you know, we've talked about in the past and with you and a few other people that, you know, why do you think Kirk dropped the fourth? I mean, everybody, all the projections were for him to go in the second round, maybe at the worst third round, and he dropped all the way to the fourth round.
Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, the difference between second and fourth might not be that much once the teams that have taken the quarterbacks have made their moves on them. I think it might be as simple as that, you know. When you start talking about, you know, when a team's going to take somebody, you know, I think it just depends on team needs. And when you saw several quarterbacks go before him, well, okay, now you move on to other parts in the draft. There's a run on pass rushers, and there's a run on running backs, and, you know, run on offensive linemen. And I think that is probably more of what happened to Kirk Cousins than the fact that, you know, that nobody brought him in to be an instant starter. I don't know if anybody was thinking of him to come in as one of these guys that was going to start in year one.
Yeah. Well, when you look to running backs, it was a thin running backs draft at the top. I mean, Trent Richardson is the only one, and hopefully he'll get a chance to, you know, if he heals up.
Yeah, but you know what, Earl? It was thin at the top with Richardson, but you know, later on in the first round, you did have some guys go. So it kind of picked up, and I guess that's why I said you kind of have your runs at certain positions. So what happened at the end of the first round, you had running backs go back-to-back, Doug Martin to Tampa Bay, David Wilson to the Giants, and then you had some in the second round that went. So they may not have been, you know, top 10 picks for running backs, but there is that point in the draft where, you know, people say, okay, well, these are the best ones out there. Let's get them before they're all gone.
Yes. Now, how much are you concerned at all, if you are, about injuries this year? We've seen quite a few in the training camp in the first couple of weeks here. Are you concerned at all about injuries? And it seems like it looks like we might have a lot of injuries this year.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to have any more than we had in any other given year. This is because, you know, it's a crazy physical sport. But I'm not as concerned as your basic NFL general manager or coach is. I was talking to A.J. Smith, the Chargers GM, earlier this week. I was out in San Diego. And, you know, I said, hey, what is it about preseason that, you know, really kind of leaves you unsettled. And that's the first thing out of his mouth. It's like, you know, you try to do everything you can to prepare your team, and then an injury can come along and really wreck, you know, whatever you've got going, depending on where, you know, what player is affected. And, you know, sometimes you have a rash of injuries. I know in the Cowboys camp, they've had a bunch of injuries. I was out there too. And first it was the offensive line, where they just couldn't get enough healthy bodies on the interior line, and you know, they were down to like third stringers, and they had a center who had never snapped before. And then like the next week, they started losing like receivers, and Miles Austin hamstring, and Dez Bryant hamstring, and then Jason Witten gets hurt. And so that's what you always worry about, even during the season, but especially in training camp, especially if it's a, you know, if it's a real key player in these preseason games. So, I mentioned at the top how, yeah, it's preseason football, so you're not going to see the stars, but for so long. And that's really one reason why. You want to give them a little bit of time just to kind of get back in the rhythm and get, you know, up to the speed and all of that, and then get them out of there because, you know, you have enough problems with injuries all along. I think at this point, I did a piece the other day about some of the players to watch as we kind of go, you know, towards the week one. And, you know, Brian Urlacher just had a scope on his knee for the Bears. It was revealed since then that he also had a procedure after last season. So this tells me that the procedure that they had earlier this year didn't quite work as well as they thought it could because, you know, he's had another scope. So he hopes to be back by week one. We know Adrian Peterson's trying to come back off of reconstructive knee surgery. He's been progressing. He's working in pads now. Hadn't had the contact, but at least it's a good sign that he's on schedule. The Chargers starting running back, Ryan Matthews, who's had injury problems his first 2 years, broke his clavicle. He swears he'll be back by week one. Usually that's a 4 to 6 week injury. If he's back by week one, that's some quick healing. If not, they still think he'll be able to, you know, have essentially a full season. James Harrison, Pittsburgh Steelers all-pro linebacker. He's been quiet, you know. We like to hear from James Harrison because he's always got something crazy to say about the commissioner. Well, he's been quiet because he's got a knee injury, and he had a scope too. So they haven't really revealed a timetable on that, but you've got to assume, just like Urlacher, that Harrison's going to try to be back by week one when they open up at Denver. Peyton Manning's debut with the Broncos against a team that has given him fits, the Steelers in that 3-4.
You know, I know you and I know, and a lot of the fans know in general that the week three is the most important week in the exhibition season because most of the starters will be chosen or you'll see the most play.
Play more than a half. You know, usually they play into the third quarter and sometimes three full quarters. But you're right, that's the best weekend of preseason football. And, you know, this year we've got the top two quarterbacks, Andrew Luck and RG3, going head-to-head with the Redskins and the Colts in week three. So that's going to be the most extensive time we'll see those, you know, top picks 1-2 in the draft play in the preseason. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm not going to be there in person, but I'll watch it on TV.
Yes, and the other thing, I'm sort of looking forward to it. I know this will sound a little weird, Jared, but that fourth week, because there are going to be so many dogfights for those last spots that you know, and they're going to be guys that we know, you know, they're going to be fighting hard just to make a roster, and you're going to have so many guys trying to make the roster in that last game.
Yeah, you know, that last game is interesting for what you just said, because most of those guys are going to get cut, okay? But I think the thing for the players, you know, and you can't say it's meaningless, obviously, to the guys who are fighting to get a job. But the thing that they can do is to try to solidify themselves an opportunity that even if they get cut, they can either get picked up on the practice squad or they could get picked up by another team. So you want to have something on film that's favorable in case you do get cut. But, hey, how about Chad Johnson getting cut on Hard Knocks last week or this week?
Yes, it's going to be interesting to see if he gets another job. I mean, I told somebody last night, I said, Chad's 34 years old. He's near the end. You know, you just can't, I said, and he knew what he was getting into. So, you know, I said, you just can't screw up at this point in your life.
I mean, that was a great opportunity for him at 34 to get the chance to come home. And, you know, I don't know if we know everything, you know, how this whole thing with his wife went down, and, you know, if she's, you know, you just don't know all the facts. And obviously it's a serious matter. But, yeah, when you start talking about his football career, yeah, I don't know. Another guy who's out there is Plexico Burress, who had 8 touchdowns last year for the Jets. And it's kind of striking to me that last year when Burress got out of jail after like 2 years, there was more interest in him last year than there has been this year. And it's, I think age is part of it, because Plexico Burress, our Michigan State guy, I mean, he still has what you can use in the red zone. He obviously, you know, he doesn't have the explosion that he used to a few years ago, but you put him in the red zone and throw that ball up there, I bet you I'd take my chances with him versus almost any DB in football, if he can get open and you can put it at right spot.
Yes.
I think he's a guy that somebody's going to pick up, you know, because here's the thing to remember about some of these veteran guys. If an NFL team signs them now and takes them into the season as a veteran, their contracts are guaranteed fully for the entire year. So you can sign a guy now, keep him for 3 weeks and cut him. You still got to pay him for the whole year. But if you sign him prior to week two or any time after that first game, then if you decide to cut him, you just pay him for as long as he's there, okay? So that contract is not fully guaranteed after week one. So I think you're going to have a rush on guys. That's what happens typically every year. You have your opening roster, and then after that first game, you have a lot of signings, and that's one of the reasons why, because of that whole week two implication.
Yes, that makes you wonder too. You know, veterans really have that much value? Because as you know, they keep a lot of guys just because they're cheap. They'll keep a rookie, even though he may not know, but they don't have to pay him anything.
Oh, no question. I mean, salary cap management is, you know, more and more prevalent, you know, as each day turns. It really just seems that way in the NFL, because you and I remember, Earl, years back where, you know, teams would stock themselves with veterans and not have a lot of rookies, and you know, especially teams that were really good that knew they were going to be in the playoff hunt or, you know, championship hunt. You know, I can think of the Steelers off the top of my head, and the San Francisco 49ers were 3 deep with veterans back when there was no salary cap and Eddie DeBartolo could spend all that money and get starter quality as backups. And you need that. You know, when I mentioned the Chargers a few minutes ago, and one of the things that they've done this year, they've really kind of done a heck of a job, I think, managing their cap with a lot of veteran guys who were not expensive veteran guys. They had 18 free agents in there, veteran free agents. And that's an enormous amount, even in this day and age when you have a lot of roster turnover. But one of the things that they think they've done or tried to do is to give themselves more quality backups. And so you kind of spread your money around. Yeah, you're going to pay Phillip Rivers, you're going to pay Antonio Gates, and so on and so forth. But if you can get some more quality veterans in those backup roles, because we know, and we talked about it too here in this segment, injuries are going to happen. You just don't know when they're going to happen and who they're going to happen to.
Oh, that's for sure. We just see them and hopefully look through the weekend. Hopefully everything goes right over the weekend. Well, I tell you, one guy he's called just a hype machine, but Tim Tebow.
Oh, goodness gracious. I know. We couldn't do a show without him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, what pressure on Mark Sanchez, the Jets quarterback. Now, you know, it's interesting because we really don't know how it's all going to work out, because we didn't think that the Broncos would go to the playoffs last year at 8-8 with Tim Tebow at quarterback. So he did some good things, and including beating the Jets, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of his victories last minute, you know, did one of those option runs, 25-yard touchdown. And I remember watching the game going, oh, my goodness. And so Tebow kind of gives you that element. He's got his fan base, obviously. He's a magnet, charismatic, all that stuff, right?
Yep.
And he's in New York. So if Mark Sanchez has 3 picks in week one, you know what's happening. I mean, that whole quarterback controversy is going to be ratcheted up like something crazy. So they play Buffalo in week one, and, you know, that's week one. And then week two, if he gets by week one, then week two they're at Pittsburgh, and same thing. Whenever Mark Sanchez stumbles, the calls are going to be so enormous for Tim Tebow. Now, what Tebow does with that opportunity, if he gets it, it's another thing. But they're talking about using this Wildcat package, you know, for a few plays a game, which you know, you can debate that too, because if you've got a starting quarterback, do you really want to take him off the field for a few plays?
Okay, hey, it's good talking with you, Jared. We got to go, so okay. Thanks for being with you. We'll get you with you next week, buddy.
Okay, take care.
Yep, bye-bye.
Yep.
And this is WKAR East Lansing.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.